Welcome to The Roofer Show with your host, Dave Sullivan. You found the podcast that helps roofing contractors grow their businesses, make more money, and have more free time. Each week, Dave interviews the industry's top experts who will give you actionable tips and strategies for the real world of construction to help you take your roofing business to the next level. So let's get down to business.
Everybody, what's up? And welcome to The Roofer Show, the place to be if you want to grow a more profitable roofing business. I'm your host, Dave Sullivan, and I've been a successful roofing contractor for over 30 years, and I'm here to share with you what I've learned. Get more tips, strategies, and free downloads, including my one-page business plan. Download it, answer the questions, fill in the blanks, print, and you're going to have a professionally done business plan that's gives you a roadmap to get you to where you want your business to go and how to get there. You can download that for free at theroofershow.com. As you can tell, my voice is a little screwed up here, which is not great for doing a podcast, but I've been on the phone all week with some great contractors that have reached out for some conversations, some discussions about their business. We've done some strategy calls, had a number of coaching clients, so it's been a busy week, but I've really enjoyed talking to these contractors, and I would love to hear from you. A couple of ways is, one, you can schedule an appointment by going to my contact page at my website at theroofershow.com. Set up a time, we'll have a call. Give you a little strategy session for free, no charge, but we'll talk for a half hour, 45 minutes. Kind of see where you're at and share some of my experience. And I think it's been really helpful for a lot of contractors. I've really enjoyed it, and I think they've gotten a lot out of it. So be sure to reach out, contact me there, or send me a text. Just say hi. I've been getting a lot of texts, and I really appreciate that. You can text me at 510-612-1450. I love texting, and it's a great way to keep in contact with your prospects and customers. People love texts. I mean, you send them an email, they're not going to respond. You leave a message, no way. But texting right now is really a great way to communicate with your customers, and I love to hear from you, so give me a call or send me a text or set up a time, and let's talk about your company, see if I can help. And I really appreciate everybody that's been kind enough to take the time to leave me a review. I'm up to 88 five-star reviews on iTunes. I love it. Really keeps me going. Had a great one from Eddie this week. Thanks, Dave. Adding value. Appreciate you sharing your experience, great guests and interviews. It's obvious that you care about customers, listeners, and the roofing industry, and a quality life and lifestyle as a roofing entrepreneur. That I do. Your target market, startups to $6 million in revenue, is in dire need of mentors, coaches, and consultants like yourself. But as I say, I really appreciate it. It's what keeps me doing the podcast. Here we are on episode number, 155. That's 155 weeks in a row that I've been putting out some of this information. So I love doing this. So hopefully you're getting some good value out of it. Be sure to share the podcast with other contractors because it's gonna help your business. I talk about getting your prices up. They're gonna be better competitors for you. So make sure you pass this around. And all of those suppliers and manufacturers that are out there listening, this show will help them grow their businesses and be more profitable. And that's good for everybody in our industry. Got a great interview today. It's a little different. And as I've talked about before, when I'm booking guests, I want to have experts on the show that have a wide variety of topics, or something a little different. And that's what we've got today. I've also talked about how I listen to a ton of podcasts covering all kinds of subjects, But I've got a regular rotation, and one of the podcasts that I listen to is called The Wealthy Contractor. And this is by Brian, starts with a K. I don't want to butcher his last name like I know I will. He has a company called G4 Marketing, so he's always offering some great marketing advice for the most part, has some great guests on, been doing this for a long time. So everybody should subscribe to his show, The Wealthy Contractor. But the other day I'm listening and he has a guest, Scott Berman. He runs a company called Florida Window and Door, and he's a window contractor down in Florida. He's got a huge company that he built really over the last 12 years or so. Pretty incredible what he's done, and he has built a great sales team. He talks a lot about what he's looking for in salespeople, how to train them, spends a lot of time training and really gets these guys up to speed. He's a great one for knowing his numbers. And he's also got to feed that big machine. So he's got a lot of great advice on lead generation. This guy would make a great guest. So I reached out to Scott, and he was kind enough to say, hey, no problem. I'd love to come on the show. There's nothing in it for him except offering his help to all the listeners. And that's what I love about this construction industry. There's so many of us that are just willing to help. And if you just reach out to some of these contractors that have been doing it for a while, most will be happy to give you mentoring advice. But you have to take action, reach out, and ask for some help. So let's get into our interview with Scott Berman. Scott, thanks for coming on to The Roofer Show.
My pleasure.
I heard you on Brian's podcast, The Wealthy Contractor, the other day. And if you're not subscribed to this show, you got to check it out. It's a great podcast about marketing for contractors. He gives some great information. There's some great interviews. And I think you're a client of Brian's at G4 Marketing. But the two of you had a conversation about how you grew your window business in Florida. And I thought that was just spot on. Great concepts that really apply to all service businesses, including our roofing contractors and our other specialty contractors in our audience. So I wanted to reach out to you, and you were kind enough to come onto the show to talk to me about marketing, building a sales force, what you do for lead generation, because you've got a big company down there and that big machine needs a lot of feeding. But before we get into it, can you give us a quick elevator pitch on who you are, what you do, and who you do it for?
So, well, first of all, thank you. I appreciate the compliment. Brian was awesome. The company, I have three separate companies in the window and door space. The first one is Florida Window and Door. The second one is Central Window, and the third one is Indian River Glass. We primarily are in the replacement window and door business, focusing mainly on hurricane protection products throughout the state of Florida. Our main customer is really the homeowner, although in certain offices we do have some builders and developers who use us. But our main focus is really dealing direct to the homeowner on a replacement basis.
Well, I'm out here in California, so we don't have really hurricanes, but we've got fires and earthquakes. We've all got our issues. I'm not aware of the products particularly, but these type of windows are hurricane resistant. Is that right?
Right. So in Florida, we have to provide homeowners with hurricane protection, mainly for insurance mitigation. So in other words, if you have hurricane resistant products in your house, your insurance company will not only cover the house in the event that there is in fact a hurricane, but they will give you typically a reduction in your premium because their risk is less. So no different than a roof. A hurricane-approved roof or impact windows. If you have those two things installed, I believe that the mitigated damage is likely to be like 70% less than, or maybe even 80% than a house that doesn't have hurricane-approved products. So we focus on that. And in Florida, when you replace windows, and I think a roof, again, I'm not as familiar, but in order, when you decide to replace windows in Florida, you have to bring your house up to current code, which basically requires you to have some form of hurricane protection. So therefore, the window business and the roofing business is a large business down here in Florida.
Okay. Would this be something that you say they're required to do, or would this be a choice of upgrading their home? Where do most of your inquiries come from?
Well, it's a choice. They're not required unless they decide to replace the window. Mm-hmm. So if they decide to replace the window, they can't decide to replace it with a conventional window like you would have in California. Mm-hmm. If they do, in fact, make that decision, then they have to put a shutter on the house to cover up the opening.
Got it.
So in that case, most people decide to replace the window with impact products because they're replacing it anyway. So why not bringing up to current code? In terms of how we get our leads, we do a number of different lead services, from Google to canvassing to home shows to radio, basically just everything that you can think of, we do.
Okay, well.
And then I was going to say, and then we have a call center that, you know, calls the homeowners, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I want to come back to that because you talked about, really covered your lead generation, and I want to get into that. But first, you've had some really incredible growth. I think you've only been in business for about 12 years, but this business has really taken off. And I see that you have a number of different offices, whether they're branches, and also you talked about growth through acquisition. Can you tell me a little about that? How did you really get this kind of growth in your business, and what's your strategy moving forward?
So I'll start with the acquisitions. The first acquisition we did was about 3 years ago, and it was Indian River Glass, which is located right outside of Orlando, about an hour north of Orlando. We bought that company because the company was presented to us a couple years earlier. The owner was retiring, and we just at that time didn't really have a good understanding of where we were going or what we wanted to do. And then when we decided that we were ready, meaning that we had all of our systems in place from a corporate perspective, and we were ready to absorb a company, we had made overtures to the business broker who originally presented us the company, and lo and behold, the company was still for sale. So we ended up buying the company. They do about, I don't know, $9 to $10 million in revenue now. They did about $6 to $7 million when we bought it. They were not profitable when we bought it. And what's ironic is we didn't lose one employee, and we didn't really change anything other than putting in some internal systems and controls. And they're exceptionally profitable now with the same people. And over the last 2.5 years, they've grown roughly almost 35 or 40% on an annual basis. Mm. So, you know, our plan really is to grow through acquisition, but also to open offices on our own as well. But it all comes down to system. And if you don't have the system, you're not going to be able to grow. Obviously, you need the people as well and the management structure and everything else. But you have to be able to quantify every part of your business and analyze every part of your business. And I think really what makes us exceptionally successful in relation to that is that we break everything apart every 6 months. So even if we're having a great year, we're sitting there trying to figure out what we're doing wrong and how to make it even better, whether that's leads, whether that's analysis of costs, whatever the right structure is. We go into every department and we literally break it apart until we get it better. And it's never good enough. And I think if you have that attitude, you'll be able to build a pretty successful business.
I agree. And this is something that I see so often with roofing contractors is there is no system. There's no plan. There's not what I call a postmortem on so many things, whether it's your projects or not. But it's going back, similar to what you're talking about, what works, what doesn't, and let's tear this thing apart and put it together. But I think what you're saying is that you were able to go in and in this business, which sounds like it had been around for a while, maybe doing the same thing just over and over again, but they never really had the systems and processes to be in a position to grow that business, which you've done. Because don't you think, I mean, that without having those systems and processes in place, growth in a business is pretty tough, don't you think?
Well, I mean, I think really, in all honesty, most of the people in our industry, and I think roofing and windows pretty much go hand in hand, most of the people in our industry started out as an installer or a salesperson and then suddenly ended up in their own business. So they don't have the skill set on the business side. They certainly have it on the operation side relative to installation, or on the sales side relative to sales. But I don't think, my experience has been, and we look at a lot of different companies to purchase, my experience has been is that, you know, they get most of these owners don't really know how they got there, number one. Number two, they don't understand the financial statement. And number three, they typically don't surround themselves with professionals who do, in fact, understand whatever deficiency they don't understand. And I think that is eye-opening for us, because we've made really good deals with diamonds in the rough because we've recognized some of the things that they didn't recognize. So, for example, on the Indian River Glass purchase, they were sitting on $600,000 worth of inventory, but the owner didn't really know that if he hired more installers, he would make his income better and turn his cash faster. Right. So he was always behind on his bills because he was paying them on time, but he never had any money because he didn't have the proper inventory control.
Right.
So I think it's, you know, in some cases it could be minor things, and other times it could be major things, but they understand how to people typically understand how to either sell the product or install it, but they don't really understand both. Mm-hmm. And I think that we've been able to understand both and been able to leverage both to our advantage. And I think that's very important.
I agree. That what I talk about on this show all the time is, I call it the three-legged stool, where you have to sell work, do work, and keep score. And as you said, most contractors come up through the trade. I think they see their boss, you know, hey, this looks easy.
Right.
What's to it? You know, anybody could do this. And they get in the business and realize that they're just overwhelmed. Or maybe they came up through sales and they know how to sell. Both of these, you have to keep these three legs strong. And you're selling the work, that's great. You know, that's not that difficult to do in this environment. Doing the work, they're usually pretty good about that because they did come up through the trades. But the keeping score leg, which is the accounting, the numbers, having control of understanding the business end of the business, this is where the stool or the business tends to fall down. And for some reason, contractors just don't like the numbers. They will not get the education to understand. And we're not talking about going back to college. We're talking about having the basic understandings of accounting, cash flow, and just really running a business. And as you say, surrounding yourself with good people, because it tends to be, oh yeah, my wife's doing the books or this or that. We're just going to kind of cram this in, rather than taking this seriously as you would sales or production. And this is why most companies just go out of business.
Well, what happens in our business, in my mind, is everybody focuses on how much sales did you do. So if I'm riding in an elevator with, you know, 10 roofing companies and 10 window guys, nobody ever asks you how much money they made. They're asking them how much volume you did. And it, you know, I think that's a significant mistake, because you get caught up. It's an ego game.
Yep.
And as a result of that, it's very easy to do a lot of volume and not make any money. And I'm sure we all know companies and people, friends in our industry, whatever the case may be, who are in that situation. But that doesn't last for long. And in this economy, it's easy, but when you happen to have challenging times, profitability and retained earnings becomes a significant part of a business model, and most people don't understand that, unfortunately. You know, it starts with understanding the cost of your sales. There's no question about it. Because in my mind, if you're selling at the correct price, that allows you to increase your marketing budget. So while you may not get the first customer, if you have more leads, you're going to get more leads. You're going to get more customers at the right price. It's all a vicious cycle. And I don't think many people really understand how vicious that cycle can be. Because it could be 1 or 2 points in either direction could, you know, change the game for you.
Yeah, I like the saying, revenue is vanity, profit is sanity, cash flow is reality. I always said, as a contractor, I don't care about being the biggest in town. I just want to be the most profitable. And you want to focus on that profit. And you can make a great profit, run a great business at any level of sales. And you got to right size your business. And this is something that I see a lot, and I'm sure you do also, is, you know, I'm doing $1 million now and I'm losing money, but if I do $5 million, I'm going to make it up in volume. And, you know, this is my strategy for becoming profitable. But we're not selling carpets here. We're selling products that have very high direct costs.
Well, it's not only that, but ironically, if you really take a step back, we're in the greatest industry around because this industry really has not been cannibalized by Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So you really can't go online and get an exact price for a roof or windows, what a warranty is, et cetera, et cetera. So you have the opportunity to set your price. And what we try to teach our staff and our salespeople specifically is that we're never going to be the lowest price. No matter how low we are, we're never going to be the lowest. We're also never going to be the highest. And we tell customers that. So effectively get 3 to 5 bids and we'll be in the middle each and every time, but with a better product, a company that's been around in business for a longer period of time, and a better warranty. And what's that worth? I to every customer, it's different. But if you go into it, in this business specifically, and you're only talking about price, you're dead. I mean, right. You may as well close your doors now. Go work for somebody. A lot less stress.
You've got to understand your costs and the cost of staying in business and getting out there and selling value. You're so right. I mean, 90% of contractors are going to go out of business within the first 5 years statistically. And the number one reason they do that is they just don't charge enough money for their product. This comes back into knowing how to sell your work or how to present your work. And this is something I want to talk to you about because I know that you've got to have a lot of salesmen out there in the home service business, like in your industry. And all you hear out there is there are no good people. You can't find anybody to, you know, go out and present your product. And when they do find people, they're going to hire some guy that's, you know, oh yeah, this guy used to sell windows for, you know, who knows who. I'm going to bring him in. Okay. I want you to ride with Joe for a week or two and we're going to cut you loose and go out there and knock him out. And if you don't sell, you're fired. It's just that revolving door. Now, I assume you may do things a little differently.
Yes, we do. First of all, I can tell you my experience, and I think that, you know, I would assume if you took a step back, most of us would say the same thing. No salesman, whoever left me, is going to set another company on fire and correct all of their sales problems. It's just not going to happen. A salesman thinks they are better than they are, which is why they're typically a good salesman, but they also discount all the value that the company and the management team behind them allows them to be successful. So, you know, they don't understand that. So my experience has been when we started out, if you had window experience, we would hire you. We're like, oh, you have window experience? You're going to be my silver bullet. I can't recall one person that we've ever hired under that premise that ever fulfilled half of the volume that he told me he sold at my competitor. They never work.
Right.
So we made a very a significant investment in training, And we do not hire anybody who has previous window experience. I don't care if they work there for a day. They can, and it's on their resume. We do not hire them. So our hiring process is very strict. We're hiring all the time, which I think is also goes back to one of the issues that everybody says, well, I can't find labor. I can't find labor. My advice is you can't find labor because you're looking for labor when you need it. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for labor when you don't need it, you'll find labor.
Exactly.
And you'll find better people. So we, our program is very simple from a training perspective. We have a training center in our office. It consists of roughly a it's a classroom of 24 seats. We have a human resource department, which, you know, is required to staff that department, the sales training program. We run a training class every third week, so, and we're hiring people into that class every single day. Even if we don't need salesmen, we're still hiring them. We personality profile every person who works in our company. If you do not pass that profile, you do not get a job. Mm. And people can discount it and they can say, well, you know, how do you know? How do you know? Listen, when I'm sitting across from somebody, I always want to like them and I always want to hire them. Mm-hmm. But the people who I want to hire and I make them profile, 85% of the people I would have hired, we don't hire because they didn't pass the profile. Mm. So it goes to show you that from an ownership perspective, and particularly when I first got started, you want to hire and hire and hire, and you're hoping, and they tell you a good story. By the way, they're salespeople, so of course they're going to tell you a good story.
Right.
And you hire them, and they're a disaster. The profile weeds them out and saves you money because you're not spending time on people who are not going to work out. It's not perfect, but it gives you one further evaluation point. So once they pass the profile, the trainer does not even interview the candidate because the theory is they pass the profile, they're allowed to go into the training. Now, they may not make it out of training, but they're certainly willing, they're able to go into it. And you'll start with a class of roughly 20 people, and that class will last 2 weeks in the classroom and then a week in the field with a field manager. And if you end up with roughly five people at the end of the 20, you're lucky. You're really lucky. That's a good return on our investment. So you could do the math, but the advantage of it is that let's say you have a sales staff of 10 people and two leave. Now you have five people ready to go into the next, ready to go. So if the two people leave, who cares? You got five people to replace them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really how you build a sales force. You just got to keep hiring. Our feeling on employees is they're like leads. You got to keep them coming in. If you don't keep them coming in, you're going to be out of business. And it sounds heartless, but it's really true. I mean, we all. And one other point I'll go to is that I can't speak to California. I can only speak to Florida, obviously. But as an example, very few people in my company give 2 weeks' notice. That's the reality. They got another job, they leave, or their heart's not in it, whatever the case may be. So I don't really feel bad knowing that I have people coming in all the time because I know I can replace anybody in a particular department because we're hiring all the time, as opposed to looking for an installation manager when you look at it for an installation manager when you need one. And it also sets a different tone, which is every person in my company knows that we're always looking for talent. So if we're always looking for talent, you better be on your best game. Because if you're not, and so we come across somebody, there's a good chance we may replace you.
Right.
So it's very important.
Yeah. Always be recruiting, always be training, and always be retaining. And I agree with you on the personality tests. We use DISC. And before we hired people, it works. A lot of people think it's BS, but it can really help you avoid making a major hiring mistake, don't you think?
Well, that's 100% true. And what you don't recognize is that over a period of time, when you start to have an organization where everybody has been profiled, all of a sudden, your salespeople have the same profile, so you know they're competitive, you know they're aggressive, and the atmosphere in the sales room and among your sales team totally changes, because now they all have a similar personality. Instead of the guy who's an introvert sitting in the room in the corner, you got all these guys who are like lions. I mean, they're ready to eat their young. They right. don't care. And the dynamic changes in the entire company. People are happier. They're common personalities, so they all know how to deal with each other by the departments, et cetera, et cetera. So it flows all the way down. It's not just, well, you're going to increase the sales number. You will. But the total attitude of the company changes. And it's the only way to build a company. It really is. And I was skeptical initially also, and then we started using it. I'm like, this is amazing. So it takes all the guesswork out of it. Again, it's not perfect, but it certainly eliminates a lot of mistakes.
Right. I agree. And you're saying that you would prefer not to have somebody with this sales experience that's been around the block. I agree with that. What type of people, personalities, do you want working for your business?
We want, I'm embarrassed to tell you, we want people that are high B and high I, I think it is, which is on the personality profile. I'm so out of the loop on that. I can find out for you. But yeah, it's high D. I believe it's high D and high I is what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. So basically you're looking for somebody who's a persuader and who's aggressive. That's the underlying in sales. I mean, then in each department, it's a little bit different, but right. in sales. And, you know, the way you get there is just for those people who are unfamiliar with the profile, it doesn't matter what personality profile you use. Take your two top salespeople, depending on how big your company is, just take two and profile your two top salespeople. And then you compare those, and then you hire to that profile.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it's, you know, it's not perfect, again, but it is a significant improvement from what people are doing now.
And you've probably learned this from experience over the years, I would imagine.
You know, we go to a lot of seminars, and we try to pick up a little bit from each seminar. So we got it. I forgot from where, and I'm like, okay, let's go back and profile. I mean, I think there's a lot of people in our industry that you think are unwilling to help you, but the irony of the whole thing is they really are willing to help you. You just never ask. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think that, you know, we have a competitor down the street from us who I didn't really know. I knew he was a competitor, but I never really went to talk to him. He never talked to me. And we were at a convention or a seminar, and I happened to be standing behind him in a line for lunch. And we started talking. We ended up having lunch. We ended up having dinner. And we shared some more stories. We laughed. We had some of the same employees. We laughed. And he and I exchange ideas often. And it's a friendly competitor. So I encourage people to go out there and talk to your competition. They won't all talk to you, but most of them will. You'd be surprised.
Right.
And they're not bad people.
Yeah, and this is what I did. We have a much better chance to working together what works. What doesn't work, and most contractors are happy to share, even though you may be friendly competitors. And what I found, I was always very open because I would talk about this is the way we do it, and perhaps this is a system that we use. And I didn't mind telling them that because I knew that they could take this secret formula, but they'd never do it because most of these guys are too screwed up. And they won't take the time to make it happen. But I like the idea of getting out there, reaching out there, whether it's attending your trade groups, your expos have. And the idea of mentors is that most people are happy to help you out. And I know I am when particularly younger contractors will reach out and say, hey, you know, I just have some questions. Would you mind talking with me? I'd be thrilled to. And you need to reach out because we tend to be islands. We're out there in the wilderness as contractors. We don't really have anybody to talk to that understands what it's like to run these freaking businesses. I mean, it's tough. And to be able to have that support, be able to bounce ideas off other people that are doing it right, doing it wrong, working together, I think that just raises the level of the industry. And if we can do that, everybody benefits.
I would suggest to you, when you say to me what, when you asked me before, well, how have you been able to grow so fast? And when I respond, well, we continually break it down, you know, often our systems and seek improvement. The reason we seek improvement is because we typically have taken an idea from talking to somebody or listening at a seminar and said, oh, that, why didn't we think of that? Or, oh, that makes total sense. The people in our industry, and I don't care how big they are, there's a lot of exceptionally bright people in our industry. Yeah. I mean, they may not come across as that, and you may not think they are, and it shouldn't be dictated or designated on how big a business is. It's not the case. I mean, you may find somebody who has a great website, and the company is tiny, but they had a good idea. Mm-hmm. So we go, and I spend, you know, I'm very fortunate because I'm actively involved in my business, but not on a day-to-day basis. So I have the time to go to these things, and I take people with me. And you know, you have to expose yourself to other people in our industry, because there are tremendous ideas out there that unless you do it, you'll never discover it. And it just sets you back years. Mm-hmm. And believe me, most of your competitors are there. That or the smart ones are. Yeah. So I would encourage anybody who has the opportunity to do it, go do it. Mm-hmm. Definitely do it. It's well worth it.
And reach out to people. I mean, there. For instance, I heard you, as I said, on Brian's show. I wanted to talk with you. I learn a lot. I said, this is a guy that's, you know, has a lot to offer. And I reached out to you. And you said, sure, be happy to talk with you and help your audience. And most people, most contractors are business owners. And I think that's really something that it's tough to do it alone when you can shortcut it and all work together.
Yeah, it's the key. And most other industries do it. So why don't we do it more? I don't know, but you should.
I like
you definitely
it.
Should.
Yep. Getting towards the end here, we had mentioned lead generation, because you've got all these salesmen, you've got growth, you've got a big machine to feed. You obviously know a thing or two about lead generation, getting leads. What can you offer our audience for doing that? Because the number one problem that everybody has is generating leads. Everybody wants more leads, more leads. I want qualified leads. I want those easy leads. What can you offer some advice on how to go about this lead generation for most of our contractors?
Well, I think first of all, I'm going to say something that's totally unconventional that I guarantee you're probably not expecting. Dave, I'm going to tell you that if you want proper lead flow, you have to sell your product at the proper price. Because if you don't do that, you have no ability to spend the money in this day and age that you need to generate leads. So that's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, I would say that you need to analyze all of your lead sources to make sure that they are performing in accordance with your expectation. And when I say expectation, not every lead source is going to be a 10%. So you have to be in a position where you have certain lead sources at 15, certain lead sources at 12, some at 0, some at 5, whatever the case may be. And then you should look at a blended lead cost relative to sales. So we do Home Advisor, we do Canvas, like I said before, and each one of those lead sources have different costs associated with it and different values associated with it. So we spend a lot of money and a lot of time analyzing our lead center, and we train our lead center and our operators as long as we do our salespeople. And we get them to understand the cost of a lead and every time that they pick up the phone, what it costs. And we monitor them and reward them based on not how many leads they set, but how many demos they actually get from the leads that they set. Mm-hmm. And we set the expectation. You know, so I don't think any of us really have the answer theoretically to leads, but I would suggest to you that It's a combination of a bunch of different sources at all different times, from shows to Canvas to Google to whatever. And it's not one, but it's the combination. But it all starts with what you charge for your product. Because if you don't have the right price, you're not going to be able to spend the money anyway. That's my answer. Okay. Maybe not what you wanted to hear, but that's my answer.
No,
Hopefully it made sense.
It makes total sense. Contractors have to get their mind right and stop thinking that you have to be competitive, that you could never charge that much money, because that's why contractors go out of business, because they just never charge enough money to run a business. They don't have enough money, not only for marketing and to be able to grow your business, but they don't have the money to hire the best people. And this is what you always hear is, you know, I can't get any good people. Well, that's because you pay them like crap, because you're not making any money, because you're always worrying about your price. But I like how you have your lead cost down to a science, because you've got to know where these leads are coming from. You have to know.
100%.
Yeah, you have to know what's working and what's not. And the only way you can do that is to track the numbers. And I see too many contractors that don't even track the lead source. So if nothing else, get out a piece of paper and be sure you ask everybody, where did you hear about us? Where did that lead come from? And to be able to track those. And then you can see what, break it down by cost, how much each of these leads are costing you. Take a look at how many appointments you're setting, how many presentations you're making, and how many deals you're closing. On each of these, you've got to know these numbers. Otherwise, because you've got to spend a lot of money on marketing if you're going to grow a business.
We spend millions of dollars.
Yeah.
But and by the way, it's never an efficient number. So, I mean, you could, you know, everybody could sit around and you can sit in an industry conference and say, well, what's your lead cost? And people define lead costs and marketing costs all different ways. Some people put their call center in it, other people don't. Some people put referrals in it, other people don't. Whatever works for you, you should do. But my experience in looking at a number of these companies to acquire is that they don't have the right margin to be able to scale the business because they're worried about raising their price. Mm-hmm. And so when they raise their price, they think that they're not going to get any volume.
Right.
That's not really true. The other thing we found was that when you look at these companies, everybody's pricing jobs as if they're perfect. So they're making widgets. Well, we all know that never happens.
Right.
So you have to have a little bit of fat in every job. You'd be surprised at how many companies say a window costs $200, so I sell it. I assume my product cost is $200. But if something goes wrong on the labor bill and you have $75 to $100 more of labor, you don't have that accounted for in your price.
Mm-hmm.
So and that flows down to the bottom line, which then negatively impacts your marketing. So my feeling is that marketing is the most inefficient part of your business, but you need to know what it costs you, and you have to be able to provide you have to have the sales price be able to provide for that inefficiency, whether that's on installation or whether it's on marketing, because you are going to have months where the phone doesn't ring.
Yep.
You can't time it. It's like the market. You can't time it. You don't know when people are in the market, when they're out of the market. Be consistent. That's my biggest advice. Be consistent and don't give your sales guys too many leads.
Yep. Exactly. But you have to continually to market. And I see so often where, oh, you know, we're busy now, so we're not even going to answer the goddamn phone. And it doesn't work that way. You always have to be marketing, wouldn't you say?
Yes, and I would also suggest that you need a person to physically answer the phone on the other line when you are marketing. People want to set an appointment from a person. So even in this day and age, they want to talk to a human from here, country.
Well, as many of our listeners know, one of my sponsors is Ruby Receptionists, and this is what they do. They do a great job of answering that phone, answering it with a friendly, professional voice that is going to leave that great first impression. And of course, you can reach them at callruby.com/roofershow. These prospects that call in and get your voicemail, they're not going to leave a message, and you have no idea how much business you're losing.
You can't afford not to do it.
Exactly.
You just can't. You can't. You're spending all this money on a newspaper ad, and you can't afford a 15-hour person to answer your phone. Give me a break.
Yep. You have no idea how much money you're losing.
Right. It's just bad business. And rest assured, I'm the company you call the competitive, and my phone center is open from 8 in the morning till, I think, 8:30 at night. So you can call any time, and we're here. And we're not advertising on the hours we're not here. Mm. So, you know, that shows you the significance we place on somebody physically answering the phone.
I like it. In wrapping up, I want to talk about one thing because I think it's so important that you brought up in your interview with Brian. And you talked about making acquisitions. One of the factors in those acquisitions is that you want to see a physical building or you want real estate as part of that acquisition. And you've talked about how important it is to buy your building, to own your property, to diversify. And this is something that I talk about all the time. I bought my building out when I was first, I think, 26 years old, and it has been an incredible investment. And this is something that I think is so important. It's really a no-brainer, I think, to buy your own property eventually and have control over that. Do you think that's something that, as advice to our contractors, is that this is, you've got to look at this and diversify your business outside of just your contracting business? Would you agree?
Yes, I think it is absolutely the easiest way to build wealth by owning your own building. It's just a natural progression of things. We've done it. All of our locations are company owned. Or owned by me, I should say. I would highly recommend it. Interest rates are at an all-time low. There's no reason that you shouldn't be taking advantage of it. You know, my recommendation on structure, and everybody should talk to their own accountants and financial people, is that you spin the real estate off into a separate company so that you're paying rent into that company so that in the event that anything happens, you still have the real estate company as opposed to the exposure to the home improvement company. And we've been very successful at it. We've made very good investments and as a result of it. And we have had a significant return on our investment. Just to go one step further, for those who are, some people may say, well, I can't afford to buy my own building. I can't this, I can't do that. One thing I would suggest to you is that there is SBA money available for owner-occupied properties. And so if you go to buy a business, if you're a contractor and you want to go buy somebody's business, you can certainly apply for an SBA loan. The advantage of tying it into the real estate is that you also will get a payment on the business and the property of 30 years. So it does give you the option of additional less capital outlay because you have to put down 10%,
right?
And then you can turn around and finance everything over 30 years with a prepayment penalty in the first three, but then no prepayment penalty. I think it goes sort of down over time. We haven't done it, but I know some people who have. So it's a very easy application and from what I understand, and it makes it affordable for everybody.
Right.
I would not, my personal opinion is I look at companies and if they don't own the real estate, I'm not interested. That's my rule of thumb at this particular time. That may change, but that's what we're really looking for. And the final piece of that from an acquisition perspective is that typically you really are able to make a better deal with the owner if you take both the real estate and the business.
Right.
Because most people don't want to do both or don't have the financial capacity to do both. So you are able to buy one or the other at a discount on a good deal.
Right.
But that's been my experience. And I would strongly encourage anybody who can do it to do it.
I just want to summarize what you said because I am in 100% total agreement with you because, as I said, my first building, it was through an SBA loan. There's a ton of money out there that they want to give to small businesses to be able to do this. And Also, I think what you said, and I'm not an accountant either, but what we always had done with our real estate is do not have it owned by the operating company. You want to have that set up as a separate LLC where you own that property. They're paying rent to you. And as you say, if anything goes south, you're not tied to that real estate. And there's just so many other opportunities.
Well, you're not tied to the business.
Right. It's a tremendous thing. And this is something that everybody should really look at. And just as an aside, I've always done that with large equipment also, is that I've always set that up as a separate LLC. And the company rents that equipment from me. So just another way, but I'm no, like, as
never
I say,
thought of that. That's another great idea.
Yeah. And as I say, I'm no accountant, but by doing that, you can get your friends together, for instance, go out and buy a bunch of equipment, then rent it to the business, and you've got that income coming in. So it's a great investment. But anyway, that's aside.
And then you also have the depreciation that nobody talks about.
Exactly.
It's the best investment you can make.
Yep.
I mean that's how I would look at it. It's the best investment you can make.
Yeah,
but you also have to have the discipline to pay yourself the rent every month. You have to treat it like you're making a rental payment to a third party. You can't say, "Oh, I don't have the money this month. I'm not going to make it this month." You got to do it religiously.
You look at these guys that are running around with tremendous wealth. Most of them made it through real estate. There's a reason for that. And over time, like, I've owned my buildings for 30 years or so. I mean, these things, it's been tremendous. And you don't have to rely on this business. And if you eventually want to, which is what most people want to do, have some kind of an exit strategy, you can sell the business and you can make a great living on your real estate. So I love that strategy. I think it's really important. I just want to get that out there. But Scott, I mean, this has been tremendous. You've offered so much information for our listeners. I know I've learned a ton. And if they want to reach out to you, perhaps, I know that you're interested in helping others in the industry.
Absolutely.
How can they get hold of you?
I can be reached at 561-340-4300. Or my email is scott@floridawindowanddoor.com. And I'm happy to help anybody. It's been my pleasure.
That's awesome. And I really appreciate you coming down. I'm so glad that I reached out to you. And
it was very nice of you.
Well, it's great. We all learned a lot. So, Scott, thanks so much for coming on and giving us this wealth of information. I appreciate it, and we'll talk soon. Well, that's it for the show today. And thank you all for listening. And be sure to subscribe to the show and forward this along to other contractors. Help them make a better, more profitable business, which helps the industry for all of us. Until next week, we will catch you on the Roofer Show.